But considering the peril of the times, having built up in the Senate an extraordinary seniority, 24 years longer than any senator in the history of our state has served, and having gained the confidence and the support of my Republican colleagues, with unanimously, but for one exception, that of Senator Helms of North Carolina. And I don't miss that, I assure you. Though he's a fine fellow, and as a matter of fact, is a member of the committee, of which I am the ranking member. But having gained the support of my colleagues on the Republican side, and very considerable acceptance and confidence on the Democratic side, and knowing in rather this close and intimate way the dangers which faced our country, which face peace, which face justice in the world, and realizing that this was a time of overturn, and it is. The words liberal and conservative mean nothing anymore. We still say them, but they have no indication whatever as to the true relation to the concepts of our time. For example, the Democratic Party is now wooing ardently the business community and is proposing measures which are very heavily dependent for their effective execution on the business community. And this is a choice as between business and government. The Republican Party, my own party, is in a very deep conflict over the issues of social responsibility and over the issues of what should be the social aspect of our society, a deep feeling about family and about the relation of groups to each other, including ethnic and religious and color and comparable groups, and what should be that relation. Witness, for example, the problems about affirmative action and whether or not we should effectively enforce these new laws respecting non-discrimination and especially respecting women. These are totally new concepts. Some of it gets a little fustian, like opposition to the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. But it gives you a smile, but even that is attributable to some deep malaise that overwhelming government threatens to rob the individual of any individuality. And if he wants to kill himself driving at breakneck speed, that's his problem. A little bit heedless of the fact that he would kill lots of others too, but nonetheless with that concept. So nothing is static and nothing is taken for granted. You've got to prove everything now, and I find that too on the floor of the Senate. You can't get away with the fact that I'm a prestigious fellow. I wouldn't mislead you. Forget it. Everybody wants to know, what are the facts? What are you really basing this on? And can you prove it? And will it stand up in the proof? So, in all of this, I felt that my own experience as a senator and as a lawyer and as an army officer and my relationships to my colleagues and the ability to grasp a situation, and sometimes, indeed fairly often, to find a formula which can resolve it, because the danger today is inaction. In so many cases, any answer will do, whether it's yes or no, just so people get an answer. But at a time like this, it is so difficult to bring about the kind of consensus which gives a stable and dependable answer upon which any planning in any measurable time in the future can be done. So I felt that this was a role that I was indeed uniquely trained by temperament, by training, by experience, and by seniority to fill. And what I thought about in the last few days is that there comes a time in a man's life, even a politician, when he ceases to be a party politician, and when he becomes a representative of all the people to whom he owes an obligation. And so it enabled me to put into focus the fact that though the majority of voters in my party's primary did not see fit to make me their nominee, the final test, as Harry Truman always said about polls, is in that poll on Election Day, November 4, and that therefore I should leave the issue calmly but with determination to the people of my state. And that's what I've resolved to do. And I can assure you from my experience that in the modern day, they'll find me, as LaGuardia used to say, on a Chinese laundry ticket. They'll find me if they want to vote for me. And I don't need to anymore assume that I've got to be in every town and every hamlet and every city of the state in order to convince them about myself. People know a great deal about me, and they've heard a great deal more within these recent weeks. And in addition, my physical capability, they've now seen and heard me and been able to shake my hand in practically every place in the state. So we're in the stretch now with all these things capable of being laid aside and getting down to the issues of what we should do about our country and our world. And those issues, ladies and gentlemen, are dead serious, because anything can happen anywhere, anytime, including the USA. And you will see, in my judgment, in the next decade, which, as Dr. Kissinger has so truly said, will be a great and upsetting decade. You will see some of the most extreme and unusual propositions proposed in almost every field that you could imagine in the history of our country. And you will see coalitions which will imperil the very basic freedoms of our country, including the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. For we face one thing which we have to face, and that is the validity of the whole federal system itself. How can we work as so great a nation, divided into 50 parts, with the lines of jurisdiction between these very parts very difficult to establish and to bring from them an orderly and effective government? The federal system will be tested as it never has been before, and it will have to be simplified and will have to be streamlined. There are many things in which we may have to use what's called the doctrine of preemption under the Constitution, in which, and there are enough lawyers here to know the difference, the United States steps in and acts for the country as a whole, rather than every state letting every state act for itself. And also, we're going to have to surrender some powers to the states, which the states can do better than we can in the central establishment. And finally, and very importantly, and we happen to have as a guest here tonight, the number one business statesman of the United States, in Reg Jones of General Electric, we're going to have to transfer a lot of things to business, which business never dreamed of accepting from us before, but which the necessities of our time will compel. Let me give you a very simple one on that score. One of the big problems in our country, one of the big social problems, is working mothers and children who have no place to be while mother works. And, of course, non-working mothers who are on welfare and whose care of children is either deficient or should not be required. They should rather work, because welfare is a big bone in the throat of many people in this country, especially many members of my party, who can't believe that there's any such thing as honest welfare, find it even hard to believe that it's needed. notwithstanding the very clear evidence to the contrary. And so business, which is ideally situated for the purpose, may in the final analysis be asked to undertake that enormous problem. And, of course, so many of you know the problems of youth unemployment, especially in ghettos and in the central core of cities, which is actually at the root of our problems of street crime, which are very real, I assure you, in this country, and very discouraging. And there, too, the commitment may have to be made by business to really deal with and take over that problem on given terms, whatever those terms may be, and I won't try to discuss them now because it will get us into too much detail. Also, even in business, you are likely to find great problems. For example, we have now hundreds of thousands of working people unemployed because management in steel and autos made very serious mistakes. Now, the people taking the rap, I might say, are not just the stockholders. The people taking the rap are these unemployed workers. And the people taking the rap are all the people of the United States because we're paying their unemployment compensation, if it's particularly extended, and we're accepting other social difficulties in this regard. Now, I would be dead set against substituting for the judgment of management the judgment of government. But nonetheless, I might be, but there are lots of others who might not be. And you may find that as a very difficult social and economic problem in our country, requiring new approaches to management responsibility, both to the investors, which we did work out through the SEC in the main, and to the people generally. Now, these are all very nettling problems which are going to have to require a cool head and a very steady hand. And I haven't begun to deal with the burden of taxation on the individual, which could very well drive the United States in the electoral system into being a completely reactionary society. Not a far cry from even the denial of human rights. It can happen. It can happen anywhere. And we haven't begun to deal with the problem of U.S. productivity effectively and the competitiveness of the United States in the world, which is a very serious disadvantage for our country and its future. We haven't begun to deal with an effective compact between labor and management and investors to look after the future of this country. And we haven't begun to deal with what to do about the great and decaying cities, the very heart of the culture and the civilization of our country, which are dying on their feet and, like this city, living on a time bomb of the streets and the conduits and the transportation and the bridges, which could blow up in our faces any day, many of them not having had maintenance for a century, when they should be effectively maintained every 20 years. And I haven't discussed the foreign policy field, which ties so directly into the domestic field. Let me show you how. For example, we have not won wars because we have matched any enemy, plane for plane, ship for ship, tank for tank, or man for man. We have won wars because when you press the button in this country, in our industrial system, we were able to turn out the goods in a way which boggled the imagination. And so we could arm ourselves and our allies and win those wars. Now, if the American productive system is really deficient, this is the most critical single element in the national security and the national defense. And hence, its repair becomes absolutely number one priority for our whole country. And finally, who wants to fight wars? I mean, war is the failure of politics and of diplomacy. It is no success, and therefore the care and tending of our alliances, because that's the hallmark of the free world. As Dr. Kissinger so truly said, communist societies are complete failures. And communist societies don't have alliances. They don't dare. They don't trust each other. But that's how we defend ourselves, with alliances. And yet we find our alliances in complete disarray, as if we were all speaking different languages. Now, in all of this maelstrom of problems, I felt that I couldn't take a walk. Gets right down to that. I couldn't take a war. And because of my very profound confidence in the people of my state and their intelligence as voters and their intelligence as fathers and mothers and husbands and workers in the economy and in the society, but I felt it my duty, considering what they had given me by keeping me where I was for so long, to give them of myself or whatever there was to give. And that's the whole rationale for my running. And so I shall continue and hope and count upon your support and the vast extensions of your support, which is possible, with a sense of mission that this country needs understanding, clearness of vision. It needs concepts which will hold us together, not drive us apart. It needs infinite patience. It needs looking down the road, not just for next year or the year after, though those are critical because the thing can blow at any time, but for decades after that, and feeling that so long as life permitted it, I wanted to be an honest trustee for my people, for those who are deeply interested in all of these subjects, for those who want peace and tranquility and a just America. As a factor for morality, we may not be able to attain it every time. I agree that the president has stretched the rubber band on human rights often too far. I'll give you a practical example. There is no reason why the United States should not enjoy, continue to enjoy, the closeness, which is so critical to the security of the Western Hemisphere, with the people of Brazil. And to try to do all this with temper and judgment, bringing people together insofar as they can be brought together, and fashioning institutions, new institutions, with the care and the patience which will provide for the tomorrows as well as the todays. And essentially, I'm a middle of the roader. I'm a moderate. There's nothing flashy and exciting about me. This is hard drudgery and takes unbelievable work. And the word workaholic, which has been applied to me by the great expert, my wife, is true, but I have a deep conviction that that's what's needed today. And so, my friends, I volunteer for the duration. I hope you'll accept me and help me to do the job. Thank you.
Senator Javits, then immediately after the toast, if any of you would care to join us downstairs, we have after-dinner drinks down in the bar room where you came in, or home if you wish. It's still early. I don't know how we're coming with the champagne, It's here. Two very practical business announcements. Number one is that somewhere in the room, or I believe outside, they are circulating a petition to be signed because Senator Javits is seeking to get an independent line on the ballot. For those of you who would care to join us in signing that petition, we would be most honored to have your name. And secondly, you cannot have voted in the primary to sign the petition.
Have to be a registered one.
Mr. Trubin, any questions?
Hey, Trubin.
The man you're selling the tanks to.
I'll be glad to answer all.
One is the raising money. We have a finance committee, which is headed by Fred Rose, who is here tonight, whom I also want to thank from the bottom of my heart with his wife for heading that. And Nick Hayes is here, who is the operating executive. If you're interested in getting a function, a breakfast, a lunch, a dinner, a reception, if you'd be kind enough to ask for Hayes, he'd be right here. Here he is right here in the foyer. We would be happy to work something out with you. Secondly, this processing of this petition, which we just talked about, and which is here to be signed under the terms you just heard, by any registered voter, regardless of party, who has not voted in the primary. That's the only qualification. This petition will now have to be dealt with in a technical way, certain items in it filled out, etc. We will have thousands of names. We're thinking of 40 to 50,000. And this will be done tomorrow. And it will take a lot of volunteers to do it. And so anyone who has a knowledge or any reasonable acquaintance with how to deal with a form which requires certain inserts, which means lawyers, law clerks, accountants, anyone who can deal with paper is invaluable to us as a volunteer. And so again, if you will just
express my gratitude to Ray and to Chairman Mann for allowing me to speak first so that I can make the trek back to New York and still make the 7 a.m. to Washington, which is what it is tomorrow morning. My text tonight is the new opportunities of American business, as epitomized by our state. We are, I'm sure you all understand now, a have-not state. We in the Northeast, with New York as the leading state in this area, have suffered very serious erosion of our industrial power. It is not irremediable, I hope, but it is very serious. And it will take a monumental effort by business, as represented in this organization, which now has affiliated with it, not only chambers of commerce, but small business organizations as well. It will take a monumental effort for business and government and labor to get this state back in the running as the Empire State, a title we are in danger of losing, in grave danger. There was a time when we voted for things in the Congress with a feeling that so much revenue for the federal government originated in the state of New York that we had to show our responsibility to other parts of the country by sharing with them, in the sense that we did not get back remotely what we sent down to Washington in terms of various kinds of federal payments. That time is no more. We now, in respect of a formulae by which federal aid for education, for health, for welfare, and for dozens of other things is distributed, are looking to have the same advantages that in other days we freely gave others. So, as the Lord always helps those who help themselves, you can see how critical it is that this state, through the use of its economic power, restore its standing and indeed its economic viability. And in this election season, and elections are a very good thing, they put people to their proof, and they test the electorate as to its comprehension of the issues and the ability to grasp what's at stake and to act appropriately to the occasion. One of the great joys of American citizenship is, right or wrong, to exercise this discretion. And if you do nothing else, I would suggest, and I'm not fooling, that you enjoy the election season. You enjoy it by learning about things which you might not otherwise pay serious attention to. I can assure you from a long and ripe experience that when you craft a speech or a statement or a law which deals with the basic problems of our time, it's very unglamorous and very unlikely to attract much attention, except in election time. Then people listen and people are interested. And that, I think, is one of the great advantages of the American electoral system, that we can have this free and open debate and presentation of ideas. And it is in that sense in which I speak. You all know, and I'm delighted that the wives are here tonight, because this is just as serious business for you as it is for the businessmen, and certainly for the businesswomen who are active in the economic process. You know that we're in very serious trouble with two things called joblessness and inflation, both of them simultaneous, and both of them almost immovable. And that the best promise we have from the development of the economy is that our 8 million unemployed will perhaps not grow any larger than 8 million into 1981, perhaps even beyond that, predictions are for 82. And that our inflation, which is roughly speaking a double digit, and which could easily run away again, does not run away, but stays confined, perhaps just slightly under the 10% figure. So if you have a fortune, no matter how small, this inflation, if persistent for only 10 years, may completely erode it. No wonder it is, therefore, that people like myself, who've lived a long time, and had a great deal of experience with the American economy. Find in our country for the first time, I know I did, far too much of a feeling that, well, maybe America really can't make it. And maybe it really is not the dream and the hope of all mankind. And maybe we have not really learned how a just and honorable society with decency and regard for the individual may be run. I don't believe so. But I can assure you that the Business Council is going to have an opportunity to find out and is going to have an opportunity to strike many blows for freedom in the course of its activities. Because more and more our future, socially, economically, and I might say also in terms of security, will be decided by our economic condition. And let me give you but one example of that, especially as to the latter, which sounds so alarming. That is the question of security. The United States has never won its wars, not even the North against the South. The United States has never won its wars because we match our enemies plane for plane, or ship for ship, or man for man, or tank for tank, never. We have won, and we have been strong, and we have prevailed on earth, because when the moment came, you could press the button of the American industrial machine, and the material poured out to overwhelm every enemy, to arm our allies for the purpose, as well as ourselves. And it is this strength which is being compromised today, by the fact that we're diminishing in our productivity drastically and seriously, and that we're diminishing in our inventiveness, and we're diminishing in our competitiveness. And as you know, the outgoing tide goes very, very fast. Very fast. And so it is a moment of real alarm. Now, what's to be done? That's what I came here to talk with you about. What's to be done? I'm not hopeless about the United States, neither are you, in the main. If you were, you wouldn't be the activists that are represented by this organization. I think it's pretty well decided now, as a matter of national policy, that some kind of tax inducements are necessary. But the popular fallacy is that they alone can turn the tide. They can't. This is a very strong tide, which is not going with us. And I do not believe that it can be turned alone by cutting taxes. However, an individual income tax is desirable, because next year we face very heavy income.